are listening to the Team Flower Podcast, where we talk about flowers and the people who have dedicated their lives to sharing them with the world. In today's episode, we have a special treat for you, not one, but two American growers. Now, the tips that we've got in here are great for both growers and designers alike. So stay tuned so that you can gather all the great information that you need for your business and life with flowers. First, we have Martha and Mo from the Alaskan Peony Cooperative. They grow and ship peonies all over the country during months when it's really hard to find them. Learn a little bit about their growing conditions, what makes Alaska special, and how you can apply some of these things in your own business with flowers. And then we have Norman from Peter Court Roses, a long history of family growers who are shipping their flowers all over the country as well. Learn about new products that they have, like the Martagon lilies that are so tricky to find, and their beautiful greenhouse-grown garden roses. This podcast is brought to you by Team Flower. Team Flower is a group of people who are loving the world through flowers. If you're doing that, you're a part of the club. Welcome to the party. If you'd like to know when new podcast episodes are released and receive fun video tutorials and articles, sign up for our Pen Pal Club. It's free. Visit teamflower.org and click on free resources. Well, I have Martha and Maureen from the Alaskan Peony Cooperative here with us today. Why don't you two introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your co-op and what you do within your co-op, what your roles are.
Hi, my name's Maureen Hornbrine, and I take care of the marketing and social media for the Alaska Peony Cooperative.
And my name is Martha Lojeski, and I am the salesperson for the cooperative, and I do also treasury work.
Okay, great. So whenever we call to make an order, we are talking to Martha, and when we see all those pretty Facebook posts and Instagram things, those are coming from Maureen. Okay, so there are an increasing number of American growers who are seeking streamlined ways to get their products to market, and I've seen some starting like wholesale markets down here in the lower 48 and in their communities or co-ops similar to what you've done with the Alaskan peonies, and I just had a few questions that I thought might be helpful to somebody who's considering starting a cooperative in their area. So I was wondering what prompted the formation of your co-op and what steps and resources you utilize to get that started.
I think in the beginning we were just a bunch of growers that were interested, and we were meeting on a regular basis, and eventually we started thinking about what sort of where we were headed as growers, and then once we were ready to send peony stems to market, how that was going to happen. So I think marketing was really the driver for us to get our cooperative started.
Okay, great. And then I guess it sounds like you were meeting regularly before the co-op started taking place. You just had those similar interests and were headed in a similar direction, everyone growing peonies and kind of helping each other get things going and started. Is that correct?
Yeah, that sounds correct. We would, every year there's an annual growers conference up here. So we would meet each other in up at the growers conference. We would see each other at farm tours or sometimes just volunteering at each other's farms and visiting. And so okay. The networking kind of happened that way.
Okay, so you kind of knew each other before, you know, the idea came to, okay, let's go ahead and form this co-op, just sort of in somewhat casual settings.
And I think in the very early days also, we thought that it would be nice if we all worked together to do group orders on supply purchases. Okay. So that kind of set the groundwork for us deciding that instead of just a purchasing co-op, we wanted to also be a marketing co-op and fulfill some of those needs as well for the growers and the members.
Okay. So I know you guys had relationships, you know, existing before the co-op was taking place, but whenever the idea came up to have one, what kind of steps did you guys take as a group? Like, what did those conversations look like? And did you utilize any kind of business resources in Alaska to help you get, your business formation and everything put together?
Yeah, in the beginning, we were just kind of meeting maybe once a month, pretty informal, just to kind of see what the interest was. We did that about for the first year, and then we started to get a little more serious and formed the co-op itself, and we started meeting on a more regular basis, once a week. And as far as resources we use, we've really found the University of Alaska Cooperative Development Program to be helpful. They've been a really great resource for us.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. And what type of person do you feel like is a really a best fit member for a co-op? Like, what shared values and skills are required for the group to function well?
Definitely being open, an open communication style. There's a lot of different ways that you can set up a cooperative, and everybody has their own opinion on how they want to make a business run, but the cooperative is run by every single member, so it has to be a model that fits every member. So your idea needs to be communicated on an equal playing field as another person's idea, and for the most part, we generally agree on what direction we want our cooperative to go because we're very like-minded. And for our prospective members, we make that very transparent so that they know what they're getting themselves into before they just sign up and join this business that they know nothing about. So definitely open communication, transparency is really important so that every single person knows exactly what's going on with their business. We definitely have responsibilities that are partitioned out to individual people, but everybody knows what everybody's working on and we work together as a group. So somebody who likes to run the show, I guess, probably wouldn't work well in this business model because they have to work with lots of other different styles of people and make business decisions that are good for the business, not just their own personal place.
Right. So openness would be a really a key descriptor for somebody who's interested in being a part of a co-op. And then I think too, like shared values. Like I think that you guys have some do you have like three core values for your co-op that you all have decided is really important to you guys moving forward, like education and things like this?
Yeah, definitely. Very early on, we tried to decide what our mission statement or vision would be. And we do have those three core values, and it was our pillars that we always stand on: education, resource sharing, and sales.
Okay, perfect. Okay, what do you think maybe the number one benefit of being a part of a co-op is for you guys and possibly for some other people who might be interested in joining one?
It's everybody is part of a team, and I would never be able to have a business this successful without all of my teammates. I am not an expert on social media, so I rely on Maureen to do that, and I am not an expert in legal writing and business documents, so we rely on our president, Gary, for that. So everybody brings something to the table, and it's incredibly valuable that when we take on new members to decide what their new role will be within the cooperative, so that not only that they can feel like they have a purpose in the cooperative, but also so we're getting the most out of all of our members' special skill set.
Right, absolutely. What's the number one tip that you would tell somebody who's hoping to start a co-op in their area?
I would say treat it seriously. In the very early days, we didn't really have a whole lot of defined goals. We didn't know where we were going. It was still just a lot of research gathering, but we have found out over and over and over again, if we treat it seriously as a serious business and not a hobby farm or a hobby business, we'll get out much more than we put into it. So we have most of us have full-time jobs on the side, and this is just a part-time job or a weekend type thing right now, but we treat it very seriously, and we are putting our heart and soul into this business, and I think it shows, and we try to just keep that moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's chat a little bit about growing peonies. I was reading a book last week that's called Carrots Love Tomatoes. And on page 137, Luis talks about how Russian scientists observe the difference between water and snow's effect on plants. And I learned that snow contains nitrogen and phosphorus, like rainwater does, but unlike water, it lacks a heavy isotope called deuterium. And this deuterium tends to slow down plant growth a bit, that heavy isotope. So Whenever the snow lacks this and doesn't have it for short season places like Alaska that have a lot of snow, it gives those plants that little bit of a boost to get going real quick. And I thought that was really neat. And I was wondering if you could tell us about maybe some other factors in growing in a short season, cooler area that help your flowers get a strong start and make them special.
Yeah, that's a really interesting fact. I had no idea. You know, I wonder if that's why snow has that certain smell to it that I can never put my finger on. But
Possibly.
Yeah, it's no secret. We have a lot of snow up here. Some parts of Alaska has more. And the Alaskan peonies are very different than other peonies that some of the florists may be used to getting from New Zealand or Chile or the Netherlands. And trying to describe those differences have been one of our challenges, I feel like. Because if you're buying a Festiva Maxima peony, it should always be the same. But when it comes out of our special place, it's different. And perhaps it's because we have a fast and furious growing season with over 20 hours of daylight during the peak growing season of a day. And so they don't get a rest. They just grow and grow and grow. And you go to bed one night, you wake up the next morning, and they literally look 4 inches taller. And so it's pretty incredible to watch them just sprout so quick. And then we have cool nights, a pretty cold winter, a short growing season. And I've had several inputs on why they think the colors up here in the pigments, they tend to get more saturated. Some people have said it's because of the snow. Some have said it's because of the spring being so quick. Some said it's the cool nights. I'm not quite sure exactly why the colors get so saturated, but they definitely are more saturated. I had the opportunity to sit with Don Hollingsworth at lunch a couple summers ago in Fairbanks, and the table had a centerpiece of Mary Jo Lagar peonies, and he asked the grower what they were, and she looked at him like, well, they're just Mary Jo Lagar because they're the only ones we've ever seen, and he just could not believe it. He said he'd never seen a color like that, and he's never seen a Mary Jo Lagar so saturated, and I don't even know how to describe the color. It was like a deep violet magenta with like a hint of black in it. And I was so stunned. I also ordered some for my field, and I only ordered 250 of the roots, but it's just such an amazing color. And on the flip side of that, some of the whites tend to get pink undertones. So if you're used to getting a variety like Immaculée, that's a very light blush from a different supplier in a different part of the world. Some of the ones that we ship down from parts of Alaska are pink. Definitely pink, like a Sarah Bernhardt pink. So we make sure to work with each individual buyer on the differences, the subtle nuances that they could be seeing when they open the boxes, so that when they get their order, they're not surprised about the size or the color. If you're expecting to have a 6-inch bloom to put into a bride's bouquet and it opens up to be a 9-inch bloom, it might throw the bouquet off a little bit, off balance. So we have to make sure we get some of those details spread out to the buyers before they buy. And so our co-op also only ships the largest buds that USDA grades, which is a AAA size bud, which has a diameter of 1.75 inches, or a AA, which has a diameter of 1.5 inches. And there's several cultivars up here that have
a
diameter.
This is just the bud.
This is just the bud. It's not even telling you how big the diameter of the flowers when it opens. And there are cultivars up here that produce 2-inch diameter buds. I mean, it is incredible to hold these buds in your hand. It's like a teacup. It's like a small teacup in your hand. So I feel like we kind of need a new grade for some of the buds that come out of Alaska. So yeah, the three differences, I suppose, from our stems would be the size, the color, and then definitely the availability. We're able to only sell stems in July and August, where there's typically been a hole in the worldwide availability.
Gap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think you mentioned about how the peonies are, you know, can get much larger than ones from other suppliers. And I know the first time that I talked to you about ordering peonies, we had talked about that. And I think that it's really important for people who are particularly doing wedding flowers to know that those are available and that they exist, because a lot of times we're tasked with doing these giant arbors or kind of installation projects. And to get a focal flower that can really assume, you know, the weight and the position that it needs to, and some of those really large scale things, it's hard to find something during that time until, you know, maybe the dahlias start coming on. So I think that's a great thing to just for people to be aware of and to know about. So I think that's great. Well, somebody had written in from Instagram and asked about how you handle ants on peonies. You want to speak to that for a second?
Sure. Yeah, luckily up in Alaska, we don't see a lot of ants on our peonies, if you can believe it. I think in the lower 48, it's pretty common to see ants on the peony, outside of the peony buds, collecting the sweet sap. But in Alaska, we don't see that a lot. But what we do see is a lot of bees on the outside of the bud, also collecting that sugary sap. And you kind of have to be careful when you're harvesting. A lot of times the bee likes to go on the underside of the bud. I think the sap kind of accumulates down there. So they'll be under there. And surprise. When you're harvesting, you have to make sure that you shake off any bees before you cut that stem.
Yeah, that's, I'm not a big fan of bees. I'd much rather be, much rather have an ant down there. Well, is it possible just to, is it going to hurt the bud at all if we swish it in a little bit of water? You know, if we're not packing and shipping and we're just going to, you know, maybe use it in the house or for an event or something that's coming up, will it hurt anything if we just swish those around in water? Or how would you recommend getting those off without damaging the flowers?
Yeah, you know, by the time the bud makes it to the client, I think most of that little sugary sap should be off of the buds. But if it wasn't and the bud was closed up, it would be fine to give it a little swish, I think. A lot of times, you know, the rain will help to remove that. And we do, you know, the Alaska weather is notorious for sun 1 minute and rain the other. So hopefully by the time we ship, most of that sap is off. But you could always just give it a little wipe or a little swish as long as the bud was closed.
Okay, great.
I have heard also that bowl of cream tend to get water spots if little like slight brown depressions if the water's allowed to dry on the bud. So if you're going to be swishing bowl of creams, I would suggest pat drying them.
Okay, great advice. Thank you. Okay, so if someone is ordering the flowers and they're coming to us in that bud form, or maybe they're picking them out of their garden or something whenever we have them earlier in the year, how many days to open is that? So what would be optimal for having the peonies delivered from, you know, bud until they're full blown, you know, at their peak of openness?
Mm-hmm. That's another thing that we have to work on each individual client with, because if it's a huge event on a Saturday, the florist might take 2 days to make those big arbors or all the arrangements. So the stems would have to be shipped from us on a Monday. We ship everything FedEx overnight. So our big days of shipping are Monday, Tuesday, because most of the events that we provide flowers for are either Friday or Saturday. And FedEx will only deliver Tuesday through Friday, so we could ship Monday through Thursday. So we have to make sure we have everything planned out. And so if your event is on a Sunday or a Monday, we would have to ship the stems on a Wednesday or a Thursday so that they could get there over the weekend, have approximately 2 days to open, and then give you some time to put them in the arrangements and use them for designing. Yeah, as soon as you get them, open the box, give them some air, cut off the bottom inch, throw them in some water, keep them out of the direct sun. I know usually in a lot of events they'll be out in the direct sun, and that's fine. You just don't want them in direct sun while you're waiting for them to be used for the event.
Sure.
Away from car exhaust, so not in the garage. Sometimes DIY brides put them in the garage because it's cooler. So just away from car exhaust so they don't prematurely drop their petals. But they're pretty hardy, so yeah. 2 days for opening and a day for designing is typically what I suggest.
Yeah, I think that's really great for timing on things. What would you recommend, though, if the peonies weren't quite open enough? Would you give them a few hours in sun, or would you maybe put a lamp on them? Or are there any tricks that you have for getting peonies that are closed to open?
Yeah, slightly warm water. I've never heard any results about putting a lamp on them, so I'd have to look into that. A little bit warmer water, potentially a warmer room. I don't know about full sun, but maybe partial sun would help them open up quicker. And if it's it also depends on the variety. Some of the varieties that have not as many petals, like a semi-double or even a bomb, will open a lot faster than a full double. So the Sarah Bernhardts will definitely take a full 2 days, whereas a Coral Charm might only take 24 hours.
Right. Yeah, sometimes I have, if I've needed to slow something down a bit for when I first started, or sometimes if I'm working at a different location and I don't have a cooler available, sometimes I will keep ice in the water to keep them closed, which seems mm-hmm. to work pretty well. And mm-hmm. then the warm water, like you suggested, I will do that, or, you know, just keep a lamp, you know, on overnight, things like this. Maybe just give them a little bit of love, very carefully, just squishing their bud just a little bit, not to the bruise effect, but just mm-hmm. to kind of like open it just a little bit and to ease it out. So mm-hmm. yeah, those are a few things that I've tried regarding peonies. So, well, thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast today. It was really great to have you. Is there anything else you would like to share? You're shipping July and August is your season. Anything else that you'd like to let everyone know about?
You can follow us on all of our social media with the links in the podcast down below. And there's also a link to our newsletter on our website. So if you want to get updates of what varieties we're shipping, updated price lists, that sort of thing, you can sign up on our website for that newsletter.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much, Martha and Maureen, for joining us today. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Kelly.
Bye. All right, welcome, Norman. He is joining us from Hillsboro, Oregon, Peter Court Roses. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Kelly. Glad to be here.
Let's get started with a couple of these questions. You are a part of a multi-generational business, which is really exciting. And one of the listeners asked who started the business and how has it changed from generation to generation in terms of your product offerings and marketing and clients and distribution. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, originally my grandfather, I guess, started the business, though actually he worked for my great-grandfather for a while, and that's where he met my grandmother. And so since 1923, he was growing roses on his own place, or not roses. He didn't start out with roses. He started out with other things. But yeah, he expanded over the years, and my father and his brothers and sisters joined the business, and eventually my dad moved out to Hillsboro and built some greenhouses, and that's where we are today.
Okay, and it continues on from there. Now, you today mostly grow roses, but you also grow some other crops in the greenhouses as well, don't you? What are a few of those?
We grow lilies, Oriental Asiatic lilies, year-round. We also have crops of ranunculus, anemone, and freesia, and we're testing out some other things. So we have celosia in the summertime.
That's awesome. Now, you now, in terms of who you're getting your products to, that maybe was a little bit different than in 1930, you're shipping them all over the country through air. Whenever you started, what was the, were you doing that whenever you started working for the company, or is that something that has sort of morphed since you've been a part of working with Peter Court?
That's something I kind of started myself. Yeah, originally it was all local, and then they were doing some air freight, and then I discovered FedEx and overnight. So that's really blossomed quite a bit.
Yeah, that's how I have gotten to have some of your fantastic roses in some of my weddings and different projects that we've been doing here at Team Flower. So I'm really thankful that you saw that opportunity and went for it. Have you always worked in the business, or did you maybe go away and do something else and come back? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I have worked in the business. That's the only place I've ever worked, really. I think it probably would have been a good idea to work somewhere else first, but that's just the way it worked out, and that's what I've been doing all my life.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, you grow your roses in greenhouses. Like you said, whenever your dad moved up to the Hillsboro area, he built these greenhouses. Is he the one who started growing hydroponically? That's something that makes your greenhouses and your products really interesting and unique. And I thought we could maybe just chat about how you're growing the roses a little bit.
Well, of course, originally everything was grown in the soil, and I started going to rose grower meetings. I couldn't tell you exactly when that was, but there was a new system they were using at that time, and it was the hydroponic system with the bent stems, and I decided to start trying that. It was not terribly long ago, and that's I think worked out pretty well for us, and so that's what we've been doing. We still do have some roses in the soil, but everything that new that we're putting in is going in hydroponics.
Okay, and how those hydroponics work, there's a drip irrigation system that provides like a steady diet of the water and the minerals and the fertilizer. And then tell us a little bit about the lights that you have that help them in your area.
Well, we grow in coconut fiber as the substrate. That's what the roses actually have their roots in. And we do liquid fertilizer. We've water the roses about once an hour, and every watering has liquid fertilizer in the irrigation, and that that's really beneficial for the roses. It gives them the ideal conditions for growth. And then we do use lights in the wintertime because it's just too dark, and they just don't grow very much in the winters if you don't have lighting.
Mm-hmm. And I was also reading that you have white fabric covers on the greenhouse floors, which I thought was really interesting because we just did a photography class this past weekend with Team Flower, and I learned about like bouncing light and taking pictures and all of those kinds of things. So it's interesting that, you know, you're using that to reflect the natural light that you have as well to provide some more lighting in your greenhouse.
Yeah, it's just a landscape cloth, and they have it in white, and so somebody suggested that would be a good way to get a little extra light in the wintertime, and so we've been using that exclusively for ground cover.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about the insects that you use in the greenhouses to keep your plants nice and healthy.
Well, you know, nowadays it's discouraged, or it's not a good idea to use as many pesticides as they used to in the old days. I remember when I first started, my dad used to use all kinds of interesting chemicals, but we don't use anything like that anymore, and we're using beneficial insects. We use predatory mites to control several different problems like whitefly and two-spotted spider mites that are really devastating to the roses if you don't control them. And we used to be spraying every couple of weeks for spider mite, and we don't have to spray at all for spider mite anymore. It's all controlled by predatory mites that are kind of indigenous to the greenhouse now, that we don't have to apply those anymore at all.
Oh, wow. So to get something like that started, are those coming in on FedEx and like, you know,
yes, yeah,
we boxes, do get those. Or how are you getting those bugs?
Yeah, they come in styrofoam boxes, and they're actually cooled with ice packs, and we get those in every week to fight the whitefly. Mostly is our biggest problem, and the thrips.
Okay. Now, do you think those are only helpful if they can be contained in some kind of a greenhouse setting, or do you think that that's something that I could use in my garden if I had like a lot of roses? Would they stick around and like hang out in that area, or are they kind of fly away?
I know people do use those kind of beneficial insects in the outdoors in orchards and other situations that don't have greenhouse enclosures, and I think a little bit more difficult to make it work in outdoor. You have to really know what you're doing, but in the greenhouse, I mean, it's not easy to make it work in the greenhouse either, but it does keep them in, so they don't disappear.
Right. Well, that's really neat and definitely an innovative thing. It sounds like you've brought a lot of innovative new ways at looking at things to the business, and I love, you know, your passion for using the insects and trying to keep the roses free of pesticides and things like that. There is such a noticeable difference. Whenever I get a box of Petercourt roses in and I'm stripping even the stems, like sometimes if I have other products that have been grown with a lot of pesticides, I can actually feel it on my hands. You know, it's like I really feel like I've got to go wash my hands, you know, just after a bundle or two, and you can see it, and I don't know, you just kind of can smell it and that type of thing. And that's not the case at all with your roses. And the foliage on them, everything is very beautiful and usable.
My sister was cleaning some roses that we got in to look at, and she said the very same thing just the other day. She felt like she had to wash her hands all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is remarkable, the difference. Well, I also think it's interesting that even though the roses are grown under greenhouse cover, several of the varieties that you're growing still do have fantastic fragrance, like an open air type of garden rose, like Helga and Levante. Those are two of my, I don't know if I'm, am I saying that right? Levante? That's how I always pronounce it in my mind.
It's always been pronounced, in my experience, as Lavande. L-A-V-A-N-D-E, Lavande.
Lavande. Oh, that's way better than Levante. Lavande. I like that. Oh, that's great. Well, that's one of my favorite roses that you have. It has a lower petal count. It's a beautiful purple color. And just very, very delicate, opens really well, and just has that nice citrusy fragrance, which I really love. So
we have a few roses, rose varieties that are a little bit older, like they've been around for ages. That's a really old variety, the Levante, and they don't necessarily hold up as long as some of the more current varieties, but they have so many beautiful attributes, like the fragrance.
Right. What are a few other roses that you're growing in addition to those that have some fragrance, maybe that I haven't tried yet, that someone might like to order?
Well, we have a salmon rose called Sonia, which is another old variety that has a beautiful fragrance. And a couple of the garden roses we grow, like the Yves Piaget, has a lot of fragrance. I can't think of any others offhand. They're a few and far between, the fragrant ones.
Okay. Norman, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the designers that work with your flowers? I mean, we use them at the Team Flower Workshop each year, but what are some other designers that we might have seen these flowers out and about on Instagram and different things, and that they might be using some of your roses?
Well, we've had an interest from a few different of designers. Aaron at Floret has used our flowers, Ariella Shazar, Sarah Winward and Holly Chapel, just to name a few.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I might have originally heard about you from Erin, like, quite a long time ago. So I know she's been using you guys for quite a long time and loves your flowers.
She was actually one of the first that we were shipping to directly.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, tell us a little bit more about what's next for you. Any new products that are coming up that we should know about?
Well, I'm working on starting a Lysianthus program, and we have some Martagon lilies that we've been doing. My sister Sandra has really been promoting those, and people really like them a lot.
Yeah, now Sandra is I want to chat about the flowers, but Sandra's your sister, correct?
Yeah, she's my oldest sister, and we're the only two that are still involved in the business. She's helping out, and she does the local market for me.
Okay, perfect. So she handles more of like the local side of things, and then you're doing orders and shipping and things like that. So if we call and chat, we're probably chatting to you. And if we're working with you local, probably Sandra.
That's pretty much the way it works out. Yeah. But I have a lot of other responsibilities besides that.
Oh, I'm sure you do. All kinds of things. Okay. Well, let's chat about those Lysianthus. What season, what time frame would those be available once you go ahead and launch that?
Well, I'm hoping to do a year-round program once we get started. I think you can grow them here year-round in the greenhouse.
Okay. That's wonderful. Do you have colors picked out that you're looking at yet?
So we're going to start with the basics. I'd always like to go try out some of the more exotic things, because that seems to be what a lot of people like to see from us. But I haven't really got any plants in the ground yet, so I hope to get started with that sometime soon.
Yeah, well, I know there's some, I've had some out of Japan earlier this spring that was like a ruffly, muddy brown color. I know a lot of flower growers are like, oh, that's like a dead flower's brown flower. But a lot of the designers really love that muddy tone because it can go with a lot of different color palettes. And so that's one that you might want to consider if you haven't already, that just nice little neutral piece.
I'll definitely be looking for that.
Yeah. And then tell us about the Martagon lilies. These are some of my favorites. I know we had chatted about this a little bit earlier, but they call them Turk's cap lilies here in Boone. And I wait every July. I get so excited whenever they come out. And I call up my local lady and she brings some over for me to play with. They're so, so special. I love them. Tell us a little bit about the colors that you have and what you'll be offering in terms of those, because that truly is a unique product.
Well, we have some colors in the yellows and the oranges and a few pink and probably a very few white. Unfortunately, the whites are a little bit difficult to grow. Mm-hmm. And we've got them planted in succession. I mean, we've got a lot of bulbs in and we've got them in the greenhouse, so they're going to be coming for quite a period of time outside the regular normal blooming time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And for those of you who aren't familiar with these lilies, they're a smaller lily and on a longer stem, and they almost remind you a little bit of a chandelier, how they come down in the various layers, and whenever they're all fully opened, it's like those lilies or the little light bulbs in the chandelier. They're very cute, and you can edit them and use them a lot of different ways in arrangements. I really like them a lot. Well, Norman, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners today? How can they connect with you?
Well, you can reach us by email, or you can call us on the phone. Our email here is orders@petercourtroses.com, and our phone number is 503-628-1005.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Norman. It's been great to have you here on the Team Flower podcast.
Thanks, Kelly. It's been a lot of fun.
And to all of you who've been listening, thanks so much for tuning in. We're looking forward to seeing what you do with your Petercourt roses. This podcast is brought to you by Team Flower. Team Flower is an online learning community and a big group of florists that are focused on loving the world through flowers. Whether you're a professional farmer or florist getting started or just love flowers, welcome to the party. If you'd like to know when new podcast episodes are released and receive fun video tutorials and articles, sign up for our Pen Pal Club. It's free. Visit teamflower.org and click on free resources.